Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. Whenever and wherever you're listening, we just wanted to extend the warmest of welcomes. So kick back and relax as we continue through our sermon series.
Well, it's good to be with you today. If you're with us online, it's good to be with you. My name's Larry. I'm one of the pastors here. And we got kind of a fun special today. Jeff talked about it a little bit. You saw some stuff if you're here in person in the lobby. One of the exciting things I can tell you is I'm going to be a little bit of a shorter talker today. So you're welcome. That was a gift. You didn't know it was coming. You're like, worship was on fire. And then we get a short message from Larry. Woo! It's a good day. All right. So this is one of your first times with us. We've been on this journey through the book of Matthew. Matthew is found in the New Testament. It's the first book in the New Testament that chronicles the life of Jesus. There's four gospels, which is the good news or the life of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And we've been walking through Matthew. We've been doing it really slowly. It's called expository teaching, where literally we're just going verse by verse and having a conversation or just chewing on it and saying, like, culturally, what did it mean then? Theologically, what did it kind of mean then? And then how can that apply culturally, theologically, like in the midst of our own lives and how we get to live this stuff out? And so we haven't been skipping anything. We've been literally just chewing on it, walking through it really slowly. And we find ourselves now, we've started into chapter 12. Last week, we started chapter 12, and we started talking about the Sabbath and this idea that Jesus was turning things upside down, that culturally and even theologically, people who were followers of God had started saying that rules and laws were essentially more important than people. And they were using it to misguide or to thwart or to persecute or to just push people off to the side. And Jesus started saying, like, you're not understanding the God of the universe correctly, and starts fixing some of those ideas for us. And there's some certain stories or narratives that we find in the Gospels, those four books, that are told in multiple places. The synoptic gospels, meaning that the same story is told in Matthew, the same story is told in Luke, and the same story is told in Mark. So what that does is that starts to tell us, like, wow, that's a really important story. The other thing it does is it gives us this really large perspective, different viewpoints from things. And so today we're actually going to learn from that, that the story we're talking about today is in three of these gospels. And this idea that I want to walk you through a little bit, because in just a moment I'm going to read you all three of these narratives, we even culturally as Western citizens, as Americans specifically, we just like to get to the point real quick. If we got to get from point A to point B, we want the straightest line. You're like, you want the shortest message. Just get me there, get to the point, get to the idea. Let's make this happen, right? We don't necessarily want to spend time with every little detail seeing the story. Well, there's something called the Chinese spiral, which is this idea that it's a much slower pace to get from point A to point B, and that while you're going on your journey to point B, you should start spiraling around things and looking at it from all different angles and perspectives to get a full understanding so you have a great, clear outcome once you arrive at point B. Think of it like going up a mountain. You can go straight up, or you can go around the mountain and spiral, and as you get higher to the top, it starts going faster, and when you finally get to the top, you now have had all perspectives of the valley, so you have clarity and breakthrough. This is the idea that I would love for us to see today. There's different nuances and specific ideas that creates a fuller, clearer, bigger picture in understanding what was actually taking place in the narrative today. So, with that really long introduction, I'm going to read you, and you can read along with me the story from three different Gospels and notice some of the different nuances as we dig in today. So starting from the book of Matthew in chapter 12. Going on from that place, he, this is Jesus, went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into the pit on Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. From Mark's version. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. From the version of Luke, on another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he rose and he stood there. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to destroy it?" And after looking around at them, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. So hopefully you picked up on some of those little nuances and ideas, and we're gonna hop into the rest of this right now. Generally, what we do is when we come to a Sunday service or church, we want messages that tell us that our abilities are remarkable, that our lives are amazing, that the circumstances, that they're gonna get better in our life, the harder that we've worked and the work that we've given to this and our determination, it will most certainly prevail. You know, what I wanted to tell you about today's message is this is not that message. So if your life is great, if your marriage is effort-free, if they just keep promoting you at work, if Stanford is begging your kids to apply, if your cat is grateful and appreciative, if you have no plans to die, this message is not for you. But for the rest of us who live in a world where our family gets shattered, our marriage crumbles, where diagnosis comes and it seems to be beyond all human hope, whether it's betrayal at work or in a friendship, or a friendship that literally like just sucks the breath out of you that you cannot understand, or you can hardly stand to see one more story of destruction and violence and evil in Ukraine, or even this morning as we see yet another mass shooting. I want to invite you to join me today. This is, again, a story that's told three times in the New Testament because there's apparently this regarded as a very important story about a man in a synagogue with a withered hand. And primarily the point about this man's weakness, inadequacy, and shame. And what we're not told is we're not told whether in the story this man was born this way or he had an accident. One ancient commentary actually tells us that he was a mason, so he couldn't practice his trade. Maybe. In the Luke version, we see in chapter 6, we're told it was his right hand. It says he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. Well, in the ancient world, most people are right-handed, and the right hand was regarded as a hand of agency. It's what made work possible. So possibly he was a beggar. Possibly no woman would marry him. And he was attending synagogue, so we know he was a person of faith, and he then would have been familiar with stories of the Old Testament. And there's stories in 1 Kings about a man with a shriveled, useless hand, and it was healed. He'd most likely prayed those prayers, but nothing ever happened. You know, what's really interesting is most stories in the New Testament of people that receive healing, they actually ask Jesus for healing. A leopard asks him, a man who has an epileptic son asks him, or a blind guy named Bartimaeus on the side of the road yells for Jesus so loudly that they all stop him. A centurion asks for a servant. Jairus asks for his daughter, but the man with the withered hand never asks. We don't know why. Maybe it's because he's shy. Maybe it's because he's polite. Maybe he had his doubts. Maybe he just didn't even know. Deformity in the ancient world often came with this stigma, even more than it does in our world today. So maybe he would have actually thought that this was a punishment from God. So imagine sitting there in this service, hiding his shriveled hand in his robe because of it, and it's the shame that comes with this. This would have been the last thing he would want anyone to notice. And no polite person would call attention to it, but someone did, and that somebody was Jesus. Now, this is especially startling to me because he said that the man with the withered hand, he said, come and stand here. That's Jesus' statement. Not just get up and stand. Not even just stay there. He said, get up and stand in front of everyone. Think about that in a space where there's hundreds of people in this small synagogue, and he's called out of nowhere to stand up. How would that feel, even in here? Hector, would you stand? Go ahead. Now we're all going to stare at Hector. You ready? This is Hector. I mean, think about that. Some of you right now are, no, you're not done. You got to do this the rest of the service. You stood. You answered the call. Think about this right now. Some of us right now are feeling awkward for Hector, right? We're just like, oh, this is the worst. Why are you doing this to him, right?
I feel awkward.
Yeah, it's me too. So in this moment, like where we're all sitting here, not only did he not get to just stand there where people noticed, and a lot of you are trying not even to look at Hector, like don't make eye contact, I might be next. He then was asked to come up here. I'm not going to do this to you. He then was asked to come up and stand here. You can sit down. Thanks, Hector. Yeah, we'll clap for you. But he then was asked to come up and stand up in front of everyone. I mean, like where everyone, all eyes are on this person. In other words, to like literally expose your shame, to reveal the ugliness and that you're trying to hide. And Jesus deliberately calls on this man to do this. And this man sits for a moment with his lifeless, twisted hand inside of his sleeve. And then the text says, he got up and he stood there. And I don't even know what caused him to do that, but he got up and he stood there. And we don't even know how long everyone's staring at this man in his hand. And worse yet, for this person, these are the people he wanted most not to be there in this moment. Why? Because the people in this room are the healthy-handed religious people with strong right hands that used it to greet each other and do important work and to shake their healthy, righteous index finger at the sin and the shame of everyone else who was there. So like church service was the last place he would want to expose his withered hand. And of course, Jesus knew all about this. Jesus understood how of all things, religion and faith can sometimes wither people's hearts to make us seem exclusive, to make us judgmental and superior and unloving. And even in this gathering where there was religious leaders, people who thought that they knew God really well, but who ultimately were opposed to Jesus helping this man on this day because it was Sabbath. They valued keeping rules. They thought that they knew and understand God, but what they thought was rules were more important than helping hurting people. That's what we talked a lot about last week. You can go back and check that out later this week if you want to. One of the versions that we read tells us that this made Jesus really angry, made him really mad, upset. But then he spoke a second time, and for this man, the second statement, I think, makes things even worse. He then said to the man, stretch out your hand. Jesus said, stretch out your hand. This is like the one thing the man with the withered hand would most not want to do. Can you think about that for a second? Like the one thing that you've put effort into hiding, the one thing that's kind of like your own little situation that you've been dealing with, now it's being asked to be completely exposed. I mean, how many of us would want to stand up here and let people see our debt to income ratio? How many of us do you want to let people see you without a hat on? How many of us want people to know how many spouses we've had, or how many dates that you've been ghosted on, or how few matches you've gotten on Hinge? How many layers do you have to wear to cover up your body frame? Bankruptcy, foreclosure, fired from a job. How many of your kids have you let down? By the way, I have four kids. My answer is all of them. So there's that. Because see, friends, you don't go to synagogue. You don't go to church to expose what you're ashamed of. Not just that. This is the one thing that the withered hand man couldn't do. Like, he's tried this a million times and somehow his brain just couldn't get the neurons to fire. And Jesus now draws attention to this man's shame and weakness, because it was the man's weakness that would become the hinge of his story and the turning point of his life. He was not asked to do what he could do. Jesus asked him to do what he couldn't. And he must have thought to himself, my whole life has been about covering this thing up. It's been centered around managing my withered hand and how I operate and which side of the table I sit on and what everything is happening around me and keeping this thing hidden. And now in this moment, all of this is undone. This is literally like, he's like, this is the worst moment of my life, until it wasn't. But the worst, some of you experienced what can happen at that place. When people have felt a need so great that they had nothing to lose anymore and nothing to hide anymore. And it comes with this honest, gut-wrenching confession of need and shame and ugliness and fear. And I wonder, when I think about this story, why did Jesus make this man stand in front of everyone and was so deliberate about it? Why didn't he heal him like privately offline? Why did he have to make this man's weakness so transparent? And I think maybe part of it is that Jesus was wanting to begin like this new community where people who are needy and perfect and in trouble and weak and deformed and ugly and shamed are particularly celebrated. I think maybe it's because shame can be hidden or it can be healed, but it can't be both. So stretch out your hand. Years ago, I decided in my own life that I needed to have at least one friend with whom I had no secrets, that I could share like all the stuff, like all the ugly stuff, all the shameful stuff. And I had known this friend for about 9.5, 10 years. This is my friend, Joe. James 5:16 says, confess your sins to one another and pray for each other so that you can be healed. So almost 3 years ago, I just walked through it with him. I'd just been through it. All the stuff that I'd been most embarrassed about my life, my relationships, my marriage, my sexuality, my finances, my jealousies, my ego, you name it. And when I was done, I was glad I was wearing sunglasses. I felt so ashamed that I could hardly stand to look at him. And I mean, like, this is my good friend of almost 10 years now, and I'll never forget this moment. Joe looked at me and he said, Larry, I have never loved you more than I do right now. And it felt so good, I wanted to come up with more bad things to tell him about. just so I could hear him say he loved me no matter what. And I realized in that moment, you can only be loved to the extent that you are known. Like if there's something about me you don't know and it's like dark, I might be able to try to impress you and you get to say that you love me. But in the inside, I'm always going to know that there's something that you don't know about me and wonder, if you knew that, would you still love me? So friends, you can only be loved to the extent you are known. You can only be fully loved if you are fully known. Now, for some of you right now in this season, you're like, man, I would love that. I'd love to ask God to help me find somebody. It'd be a good thing. Now, I'm going to tell you, it takes time. So don't go out of here and be like, hey, can I tell you my deepest secret? Like, right? You have to take like a step at a time, discern their character, trust them a little bit. Now, but what I do know is this. I know that at a church, even this church, this can be a place where people are hiding, like where they're keeping it in their pocket. So maybe this is the day. Maybe this is the season for you to stretch out your hand with a trusted brother or sister about a shame. If you have ever studied AA or been, you know that when you walk in there and you want to say something, I would say, hi, my name is Larry. I'm in recovery. And everyone would respond, hey, I got brothers and sisters in here. That's right, right? Everyone would respond, hi, Larry, right? In fact, if you've ever been to a recovery group, I've been to a recovery group on Monday night. That's exactly what we do. In other words, you're welcome even as you name your problem and your shame and you stretch out your withered hand. And what I love this. The worse your story, the warmer the welcome. Ken Dunnington has written about addiction in his book called Addiction and Virtue, and he says, one of the secrets in AA is that they've discovered that the recognition and public confession of inadequacy is itself a spiritual achievement that must be ritualized and celebrated. We think, sometimes even in the church, that the revelation and the recognition of personal inadequacy is something to be hidden. But part of their power is that they've discovered that the recognition and the public confession of inadequacy is a spiritual achievement and it must be ritualized and celebrated, not hidden. So, Northgate, welcome to the celebration of personal inadequacy. My name is Larry and I'm a sinner. Wait. Thank you. Oh my gosh. I was like, I gave you so much setup for this. I'm like, shame's on the line. I'm like, okay, I'm not a safe place to share. Okay. We're just gonna walk away. Yeah. No. Some of you guys are like, give us a second chance. No. No. See, though, this is the idea of the church. It's that we come in and this ought to be the first place that we can like disclose this stuff. And that's what Jesus is doing. This man had no idea that his weakness would enable him to be a part of the story and to be remembered and celebrated and inspire faith and hope 2,000 years later on the other side of the planet. I think that maybe another reason why this man's story went so public is that it's like us, we're really like him. It's just that some of us are better at hiding our withered hands. And for some reason, until we're driven into this desperate need or whatever, we're stuck with what only our own power can do. And we're not meant to live under our own power. You're not meant to manage your life on your own. And so maybe some unmanageable things have come your way. Maybe you're sitting next to your unmanageable thing right now. That's why God said, my strength is made perfect in weakness because it drives us to draw on another strength. So, what's your withered hand? What's your shame? What can you not do? You know, I used to think that I can like take care of everything. was Mr. Incredible. I can take care of my family. I'm here to tell you that I can't. I can't control the outcomes. I can't make my mind peaceful. I can't make my sadness or fear or anger go away. I can't. Those first three steps in AA are sometimes summarized. I can't. God can. I think I'll let him. I can't. God can. I think I'll let him. We all carry hurt and pain and fear and anger and weakness that we cannot solve. But friends, this is community. This is recovery. One of my favorite things about recovery is it never stops. You get a buddy, you get like a coach, you get community. Like you get somebody that says like, me too, look at, I've got one of those hands too. And what it is, friends, is it's time for us to care for others, to walk with others, to use our gifts. And you and I get to be a coach while being coached. We get to be a part of a community and draw others into a community and say, I don't get it all either. Me too. We literally get to be the fellowship of the withered hand. Now, as I was meditating on this message for this week, earlier in the week, I saw a video, and many of you guys have seen videos like this before, but this one specifically, it struck me about exactly what this looks like. Many of you guys have seen these before. This is a woman who's been diagnosed with cancer, and she's now gone to her barber and getting a haircut. You guys can check this out. So welcome to the fellowship of the withered hand. That's what community is, just to walk through it with somebody else. So today we're gonna end a little bit early so you can do something special. You can join. Our vision statement here is to transform our homes, our communities, and world by three things: pursuing God, building community, and unleashing compassion. And I love the way that we defined building community, which is that when you are part of a community, that you make friends, we all love this, you have fun, and you follow Jesus. And one of those things in build a community we call a change maker, because you literally are making a change in someone else's life. For many of us, it's just sitting there saying, me too, welcome to the fellowship, the withered hand. I'm here to serve you, to care for you, and to do this with you. And so today we're gonna end service a little bit early so you can be a part of that. But I also just wanna end with this thought. There's many of us that have gotten into a space where we're just like a little salty. Like we're just a little low level irritated about nothing and everything at the same time. And often you can find that is because you've just been in a season or a time or a phase where you're just like, take, 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 right? and suddenly you've got more of an opinion and you're frustrated, or you've got an unsolicited opinion. That's where you really know you've gotten there, right? And you just find yourself in a place where you're just receiving and you're receiving and you're receiving. I've talked about this a handful of times already, but there was a group of us that went to Israel just even a couple weeks ago, and one of the places we visited was the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest and deadliest body of water in the world. Why? Because over centuries, the only thing it's done is receive. It has no outflow. There's nothing to clean it out. And so it's just always constantly just receiving and receiving, and over time it's become sick. And it's become salty. It's become deadly. So for all of us, this is probably the best season for us to figure out where we can start giving an outflow, where we can use our withered hand, our gifts, our talents, and be a change maker into someone else's life. Because you, yourself, me, we've all been changed. So I'm not going to make just one of you do it, but at this point, will you all stand as we respond and worship?
And this concludes this week's podcast. We hope you've enjoyed spending some time with us. And if you haven't already, like and subscribe to our YouTube and find us on Instagram at NGateCF. See you next week.